episode 181 of my weekly radio show, The Infectious Myth. Email me at david.crow@theinfectiousmyth.com. That's Crow with an E. Join the discussion and like us at facebook.com/theinfectiousmyth. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Infectious Myth. Listen Tuesdays at 2 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time on prn.fm or download the MP3 after broadcast with iTunes or other podcast apps. You can listen to any of the last five episodes over the phone by dialing the U.S. number 701-719-0990 and following the instructions. You will be responsible for any long-distance charges. Remember that I don't know you're a listener until I hear from you. Send me a message letting me know how you stay in touch with the show and what you like about it. If you include your mailing address, I will send you a little thank you gift, which will be one of the bookmarks I make by hand using my own photographs. If you would like to sponsor this show, please contact me. You can donate via PayPal using the email david.crow@theinfectiousmyth.com or make monthly donations at patreon.com/infectiousmyth. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. We appreciate all our listeners, but if you want the show to continue to grow and improve, consider paying a small amount for the information that you're gleaning, for the support you get for some non-mainstream ideas, and the challenges you get to others. If you would like me to speak at a meeting of an organization you're a member of on just about any of the topics I've covered in my shows, I'd be happy to discuss this with you. I appreciate you commenting and suggesting guests. I appreciate your financial support as well. Thanks for listening and for recommending this show to your friends. I can divide my interviews into two basic types. Those of the experts who can talk about the big picture and explain the technical defects of one infectious myth. Sometimes these experts use real-life examples of how an infectious myth disrupts the life of one or more people. But the second type is a person whose individual experience illustrates in detail the problems with wide acceptance of one myth or another. What I also find interesting is that often the humanity of my expert guests shine through. They really care about the people who are affected by widespread beliefs that they believe are false. And on the other side, often my non-expert guests have had to obtain a tremendous amount of expertise because of the situation they are in or were in. Episode 180 with Dr. Wayne Squire was an example of an expert explaining the big picture about shaken baby syndrome. But she gave as an example the horrible situation that Carla Andrew and Craig Stillwell found themselves in when their baby Effie got mysteriously ill. So this episode, episode 181, is going to be an example of the specific case that illustrates the bigger picture. And it shows how people can dig deep and accomplish great things when their backs are against the wall. Apart from this interview, I will post a link to Carla's YouTube channel in the show notes. So now let's get to the interview with Carla and Craig. Little Effie was sleeping peacefully close by at the time. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Carla Andrew and Craig Stillwell to the show. Possibly we'll also hear from Effie Stillwell in the background, who is very important to today's discussion. Carla and Craig are married and today are living an ordinary family life in Aylesbury, a quiet town northwest of London in the United Kingdom. But there was a time in their life when things were decidedly not quiet, quite disquieting actually, and we'll talk about that today. Welcome to the show, Carla and Craig.
Hello.
Hi. I recently interviewed Dr. Wayne Squire on the subject of shaken baby syndrome, and she told me about your case and sent me the judgment from, I believe, April 2017. Were you familiar with Dr. Squire?
Yeah, very.
Yes. Did she help with your case?
No, she didn't. But we read up on her. We had a couple of videos that we watched. That she put onto YouTube that were quite informative for us when it came to the shaken baby cases.
Yes, I watched one of her videos myself, and she's very clear about the problems that she sees in it. And in the interview, which was the last show, she was also very clear. So let's before we start to talk about what happened to Effie. Can you just tell how the two of you met and decided to fall in love and have a family together? What was your story?
Well, basically, we first kind of met. Most people, you know, they kind of meet, you know, going out, you know, on a weekend. But we kind of met in a shopping centre in Morrison's.
That's not the most romantic. Not the most romantic place to meet.
Yeah, because I used to go shopping with my dad for my grandma on a Friday. And Carla used to, Carla didn't really go in there every week, but I did.
Right.
And it was like every other week we'd see each other in Morrison's.
Okay.
And then a few weeks after we started seeing each other, I happened to come up with a suggestion on Carla's Facebook. And so she added me, you know, because we looked familiar to each other.
Where from. And things kind of went from there.
Yeah. Should I add anything, babe?
Okay, and this probably wasn't too long ago. So Effie was born in the spring of 2016. She was a month premature. Was the birth otherwise normal?
Yeah.
So no problems at birth. There was something in the reports that after she was born, was Effie bottle fed? Because it said she had difficulty digesting milk.
Yeah, she was bottle fed.
Yeah.
It was only that it was after the first month or so of her life, she kept vomiting.
Right.
Practically about half an hour after taking the whole bottle.
Okay. I guess that's not that uncommon, but I guess it's disquieting for parents to have this. But things were fairly normal until August of that year, which is when you ended up going to emergency, and we'll start to talk about that in a minute. So what happened on August 15th of 2016, which ended up with you taking her to emergency?
The night beforehand, we called the out-of-hours GP and kind of explained to them that she'd vomited a very large amount and was a bit worried. And then later on the next day, she suddenly woke up screaming and went into having a seizure.
And so then you grabbed her and took her to emergency.
Yeah, it mainly came about because we at the time we were staying at my dad's, basically, as Carla said, Effie woke up crying, so Carla went to go make her milk, and I was holding Effie, gently rocking her to calm her down, and that was when she just went into seizure mode.
Oh, wow. Which must have been pretty scary. My son had seizures once, and it wasn't a very pleasant experience. So when you got to the hospital, they did a CT scan. Did they do anything else at the hospital before the CT scan?
No, I think they gave her oxygen, but they didn't do any other tests.
Right.
The only other thing I can remember as well is they put a needle straight through her shin bone.
What?
Straight into her shin bone. Yeah, they put a needle into her leg. And as far as I know, the mark where that it happened is still there. And they said it was some fluid to help her or something.
They actually put a needle into her bone?
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, it went straight into her shin.
Was that by accident? Or, like, were they... I mean, I've never heard of somebody putting a needle into a bone except... for very unusual circumstances.
Neither have I. We just saw needle straight into her leg because the mark's still there to this day.
Wow, that is kind of strange. Anyway, they did a CT scan and that revealed bleeding within the skull. I don't know if it was this scan, but they said there were no fractures seen to any bones. I don't know if the CT scan could pick up the fractures.
Yeah, there was no fractures, no, you know, like bruising under the skin or anything. it was literally just the bleed on the brain.
Right, and so the pediatrician, who is Dr. Shrith, I can't pronounce her name.
Shrith,
thank you. It's a hard name to pronounce. She said that abuse could not be ruled out. Did she tell you that?
No.
So that's what she was thinking, or that's what she wrote in her chart. And I can understand that if she thought you were abusive parents, she wouldn't say anything to you. But that kind of leaves you in the dark. There was another doctor, Dr. Russell Taylor, who also saw you, and he thought you were behaving like distraught parents, right? Very upset about your child and not really able to listen too well to what he was saying because Effie had bleeding on the brain.
Yeah, because it was Russell Taylor. She came in because she was the on-call doctor at that point. And it was when she came in, it was actually her that told us that Effie had had a bleed on the brain. And obviously that's when obviously me and Carla broke down.
Right.
Thinking, you know, how could this have happened?
Right. I mean, it would be logical to think that if your child had bleeding on the brain, that she wasn't going to recover. I mean, you would think the worst, right? So when did you find out that the medical staff, some of the medical staff, were thinking this might be a case of abuse?
It was 12 hours later. Effie went down for another scan, and when we come back up to the room she was in, there was two people stood in the room that we assumed they were social services or something like that, but they turned around and told us they were from the police station.
So you
were a bit shocked.
Right. You didn't have social workers tell you that there might be a problem. You had policemen telling you.
Yeah.
It was literally because we were told, you know, that social services had been called.
Yeah.
So we were like a bit like, well, hold on, you know, why, but okay. And like Carla said, there was just two ordinary people in the room, and they said, we're from Thames Valley Police.
And what did they tell you? Like, why were they going to arrest you, or like what were the police intending to do?
We asked them why they were there, and they said to us that the hospital feel Effie's bleed was caused by a non-accidental injury. This is when Craig got quite upset and said he was going to sit by Effie's bedside, and the police officers kind of jumped on him and handcuffed him.
I can understand your reaction, certainly. Now, as time went on in the next little while, it seemed that Effie got worse. Like the report I have from the judge in the case said that she suffered two seizures at the hospital, and they transferred her to another hospital.
Yeah.
She had two in Sturmandeville. She had two seizures in Sturmandeville.
Sturmandeville. Okay, so that's the name of the first hospital.
Yeah, that's where we got accused.
Okay, and then they took her to another hospital?
Yeah, they took her to the John Radcliffe in Oxford.
Okay.
Where she had a further seizure, so she had three in total in hospital care. But she got to, when she went to John Radcliffe, that's when she started to kind of regain health, so to speak.
Right. It says they put a shunt in her brain, which was designed to release some of the fluid on her brain, and that it was at this time they saw retinal hemorrhages for the first time.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm sure you're very familiar with the shaken baby syndrome triad by this point in time, and the retinal hemorrhages are one of the three parts of the triad, right?
Yeah.
And so this strengthened their belief that this was due to one of you shaking it. And did they have a theory about whether it was Carla or Craig? who was responsible?
Yeah, instantly. When we went to the police station for questioning, the solicitor that was there kind of pulled me aside and said that because the way Craig acted in the hospital trying to sort of leave, they said that he knew straight away they were going to try and say that it was Craig.
I guess you can understand. I assume, I mean, judging by photos of you, Craig's quite a bit bigger than you. So I guess if you were going to charge somebody with something physical, you would look at the husband more than the wife. Okay. I can also understand how you could both be very upset when people are alleging that you did something that you didn't do, and you probably felt pretty helpless in this situation.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you guys go.
Okay, so it was about a month later that Effie was taken from you and put in foster care. Is that correct?
It was kind of thought practically straight away that she was going to go into foster care, but it was only like you said, she only went in like. Discharged from the hospital into foster care after about a month.
So she never came home to you? She went straight from the hospital to foster care?
Straight from hospital to foster care, yeah.
Right. And I presume at this point the legal process started?
Yeah.
And was this a criminal case or a civil case?
It was a civil, I believe.
So what were...
As far as I'm aware...
What if they had found you guilty, Craig? What could they have done to you and or Carla? Would they have taken Effie?
We'd have both gone to jail.
Well, that's a criminal case then, right? A civil case, they can't send you to jail, but they were threatening you with jail. How many years?
They didn't really say, The reason why we kind of went to court was mainly to... We were fighting to get her back.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't really explained to us, like, what would happen apart from that. I think if one of us... Or if they would have found somebody, which they would have never done anyway, then it would have been... They would have tried, on balance of probability, if they couldn't find anything, it would have obviously gone against us. And from what we were told about, that they would have probably pinned it on me... is that I would have probably gone down for a little while, and obviously because Carla was there, and they would have said because, you know, she could have stopped it, they would have probably put her down for a little while, but not as long as me, if that made sense.
Right, and that would have probably given them the justification that they needed to permanently take Effie away from you.
Yeah.
So the stakes were pretty high in this case.
Yeah.
And there was a number of experts who all seemed to think that it was shaken baby syndrome. Some of them who are mentioned in the court proceedings, Dr. Newman, a pediatric ophthalmologist, Dr. Keenan, a pediatric hematologist, Dr. Cartledge, a pediatrician. I think his name is kind of ironic because we'll talk about cartilage later.
Yeah, I was actually saying that when I heard his name.
Yes, that guy had to be a doctor, right? Or maybe it's a woman. It seems like most of these doctors are women. Dr. Richards, a pediatric neurosurgeon, and
he was fantastic.
Yes. Okay. And Dr. Studley. I don't know what kind of doctor he was. I didn't write that down, but. There's also a Dr. Sagar, and we'll talk about that because I'd like you to talk about your theory that Effie was suffering from a disease called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, also known as EDS-4 or vascular EDS. So can you describe how you came up with the theory that this is what Effie was suffering from?
Okay. Basically, what it was is when we had our when we first started the court proceedings, obviously we had two solicitors, but Carla started to think that there must be something there, because our old solicitor turned around and said, "Look, this is above our area of expertise."
I knew that how it came about. I knew that I had something wrong with my blood vessels, but I wasn't sure what it was. So I thought maybe Essie might have something wrong with hers, and I started researching what else can cause bleeds on the brain if it's not shaken baby, and It just kept coming up with EDS, and I shrugged it off and said, I've never heard of that, so right. I don't know what that is.
I'd never heard of it before this conversation.
I got in touch with a solicitor who had dealt with a lot of EDS cases, and she wanted to see pictures of me and Effie, so I thought, okay, that's strange. And I emailed her some photos over, and instantly she said, you look like you would be someone who would have EDS.
Wow.
And it kind of, yeah.
That's what I can't understand, because the solicitor we're on about is a woman called Rachel Carter from William Mitchellmore. She just said to me, can Carla move her arms in any funny way? As in, can she rotate them all the way around, that sort of thing. I said, funny you say that, because you can. And that's when she said, have you heard of Ehlers-Danlos syndrome? And then the same day, Carla went to meet another sister called Bill Baish, who also said, have you heard of Ehlers-Danlos syndrome?
Wow. So there were people thinking about this. Now, these experts that I mentioned, they've all got medical certifications. They probably all have advanced degrees. And Carla, I don't think you've got a university education. Is that correct?
No.
And yet, they were all forced to grudgingly admit that EDS-4, the vascular EDS, could have caused the symptoms in Effie. Some were more grudging than others. None of them seemed too enthusiastic.
Yeah.
So how did it come about that Dr. Sagar, a geneticist, diagnosed Effie with EDS-4? When did that happen, and how did he get involved?
What happened, first of all, they said they wouldn't test Effie unless I got tested to see that she could have inherited it. So I went and got tested privately and found out that I did have it. And then Sagar agreed to test Effie
It was the 8th of December she got tested.
Yeah, and then the results came in February that she did have type 4.
February of 2017.
Yes, it was Valentine's Day.
Oh, well, that's turned out to be a nice present.
I mean, it when we found out that she did have it on that day, it was a nice gift to know that it sounds bad, you know, because we kind of knew that she was always going to come back anyway, and we were saying it is medical. So we were kind of pleased that she did have some, you know, it was a medical thing. But it was also, you know, like kind of a downfall, because we knew, because we were researching it, we knew what vascular EDS could do.
Right. Yes, I understand. A bittersweet moment, because you now have an explanation for what was happening to Effie, but on the other hand, she has to live with this for her whole life. But on the other hand, Carla also has the condition. And you're doing well in your life, so I guess it's not the worst condition to have. Obviously, every parent wants their children to be 100% healthy.
Yeah.
How did the court case start to turn around at that point, once you had this diagnosis of EDS-4?
It started to turn around. It started to turn around when Dr. Sagar made his report. He came into the the court and explained to the judge that there was a 13-year-old girl with EDS type 4, and when her monthly cycle started,
her menstrual cycle.
Yeah.
the first one killed her because the blood flow was too much and her uterus had burst.
Oh wow! So that's pretty serious.
Yeah.
So what are the symptoms of EDS4? Like, it's a vascular condition. It also affects the cartilage. So what in total are the symptoms that you can experience with this syndrome?
The main one is arterial ruptures and organ ruptures. There's lots of bruising and pain throughout the body parts. And a lot of us have the same facial appearance, which is weird.
Right, maybe because of the impact on cartilage and other aspects of your body. I mean, is this with everybody? Or I think it said somewhere that you're seen to have a mild case. I mean, is there kind of a variation in terms of the severity of the symptoms that people experience?
Yeah. With ours, for some reason, there's a gene that's missing, making it slightly milder, where some people could have it really, really severe and kind of not live very long.
Right. Well, I mean, it sounds like it's a little bit like hemophilia, which is just in men.
Yeah, it's very, very similar. My QC actually spoke about it.
QC?
In court.
Your lawyer?
Yeah, Queen's Counsel.
Right. Yeah, because I've always heard, I mean, I've known about hemophilia since I was a little kid, and I always knew that it was almost entirely men, but this is a condition. Is this only in women, or does this also occur in men?
And yeah, this condition, anyone can have it.
Men or women. And how does it appear that Effie is doing now in terms of her health?
We've been told that she has to have her brain and heart checked every 6 months because she could kind of grow an aneurysm somewhere, or something could just tear.
Get weaker.
Yeah.
Right.
But at the moment, she's getting there.
She's getting better. She's eating well these days, and
yeah.
So she's 2 years old, right?
Yeah, she'll be two on next Thursday.
Okay. So how long did it take for these other doctors who had all said clear case of shaken baby syndrome, how long did it take them to come around and say, okay, well, maybe there could be another
two of them were kind of said that they won't comment any further, really, because they were kind of on the fence. It was really the three doctors that kind of said, one said straight away, it's definitely EDS, and that was Peter Richards, who he was like the kind of nail in the coffin, basically, so to speak, of that we were going to definitely get her back. Sagar was saying that it was EDS.
Right, he diagnosed EDS. So.
Yeah. Saying that that's what EDS can cause, and I believe it was cartilage as well, who was saying that, seeing as it's been diagnosed and he knew a little bit about it, he kind of swayed towards the EDS. It was only Stoodley who was adamant, no, it's definitely shaken baby. He didn't change.
Right. I assume that there's still this concept in English law that innocent until proven guilty. So if there is a reasonable doubt, and if you've got three doctors saying it's at least possibly EDS, one would imagine that that would be enough for the judge to toss the whole thing out.
Yeah.
It struck me that the doctors were, I mean, did you feel that it was a little embarrassing for Carla to come up, basically to come up with a diagnosis that they had completely missed?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was a bit kind of shocked that they missed it for so long.
Well, you probably are a pretty good expert on EDS now. How common is it?
It's not, but type 4 is not common at all, I don't think.
Right.
One in
every 5,000.
Well, it's not exactly that rare either. I mean, how many people are there in England? 50 million or something population? So that's probably a few hundred cases.
I mean, there's a lot of people out there.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of people out there obviously living with it. This is why it's so rare that they're living with it, but they don't realize they've got it.
Right. Maybe they just bruise a little easier and they've just learned how to adjust to life, you know, not playing rugby and things like that. And therefore they don't really see themselves as being sick. I could see that could have happened. So when did I have you said February 2017 Dr. Sagar diagnosed EDS4 and FE. I have a legal proceeding from April 2017 where the judge basically dismisses all the charges against you. Was that the final, as you said, nail in the coffin of the case? That was it?
Yeah, it was the 26th of April was when the judge turned around and said that it's, you know, Effie can come home. It was a couple of days before that it was Peter Richards had come in and give his, obviously, opinion and his facts.
I mean, if the doctors had dug their heels in and said, I don't care what Dr. Sagar says, I disagree, I still think it's shaken baby. I mean, do you think that they would have been able to sustain the charges?
I don't think so.
Okay.
There are still doubts. I guess that's asking the impossible, because until that something like that happens, you don't really know. What role did your lawyer or lawyers play in this, you know, in terms of trying to move this EDS4 theory forwards?
Yeah, they were brilliant. It's kind of, I think if we
Credit
didn't...
Credit needs to go to you.
No. I think if we didn't meet the two solicitors, I don't think we'd have even got the diagnosis, because they seemed to know so much about it from day one, and they kept pushing for the testing to be done, and the local authorities at first weren't too sure about testing and didn't think it was going to come out as anything. And yeah, I'd give a lot of credit to them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a bit strange to me. I mean, it's kind of like somebody's in jail and says, I didn't do it, and DNA evidence will prove it, and somebody says, well, we think you're guilty, so we're not going to order a DNA test.
No.
Right? Like, this is a plausible explanation for Effie's condition. You'd think they would say, yeah, we should test for this. We have to eliminate every possibility, but they didn't really want to do that.
No. They said maybe I was drinking during my pregnancy and that could have caused the bleed, but I don't even drink alcohol, so I was a bit kind of shocked about that.
Yeah.
Well, there was a case in Canada recently where the probably the most famous children's hospital in Canada was doing hair tests looking for drugs and alcohol, and after years of you know, accusing mothers of taking drugs and alcohol, they had to admit that their hair testing was worthless. So this kind of thing is not Unusual. Yeah, and women lost their children, and I don't know if anybody went to jail over it, but it seems like sometimes the system is more important than justice. You've got doctors who stand to lose face if they make one diagnosis and then they have to admit that somebody else had a better idea, somebody with less credentials than them.
I mean, the way I saw it when Effie had her bleed was that, you know, they just didn't want to do things, they just wanted to point the finger.
Yes, I mean, that's one thing that Dr. Squire described, is this kind of the system closes around this accusation. So the police think that you did it, the prosecutors think you did it, the doctors think you did it. Another thing that was very worrisome in my discussion with Dr. Squire was the fact that it's almost impossible for the accused, people like you, to get a defense expert witness.
Yeah.
There was no doctor on your side until Dr. Sagar came along, correct?
Yeah.
And was he involved in the case before you asked him to diagnose Effie?
No.
So he was independent. And therefore, does he testify in shaken baby cases?
He has done a few diagnoses for shaken baby cases, yeah.
Yes, because what Dr. Squire described was that after she started testifying for the defense, that everybody, the establishment turned against her, and she lost her medical license and was told that she could not testify again. So I wonder if Dr. Sagar is going to experience some pushback based on...
I don't think he will. I think because he was asked by, well, Carla's solicitor asked for him to be one of the experts. They had to put like a list board of experts that they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So because it was Carla's solicitor that pushed to get him involved, I don't think he'll get any stick for it.
Okay, yeah, because I think there's a feeling that defense experts always testify in favor of the accused, but I think a lot of people think that the prosecution's experts always testify in favor of the prosecution.
Yeah.
Seems to be the case. Did this have any impact on your family? Like, in some cases, families start to split. Some people think that you're guilty, some people defend you, some people just are comfortable. What happened in your family?
I did question Craig once or twice and asked him, you know, did you shake Effie? I felt really awful to ask it, but...
No, I think, you know, sometimes, you know, you just want to cover all bases. So as much as it did kind of upset me, I kind of thought that, you know, if something's niggling in the back of your head, you kind of got to ask a question. Even though if you think that I know the answer's going to be a no, sometimes you've got to ask, because my dad asked me himself, on the first court case he come down. He pulled me inside and said to me, you know, you can tell me anything, you know, did something happen? So I think sometimes it's okay, but...
And did you feel that when you told Carla and your dad that nothing had happened, did you feel that you were being believed?
Yeah.
And were there any family members who you felt took the other side and thought that you were guilty? You don't have to name names.
I think there were a few.
So it made things a little bit chilly, perhaps.
Yeah,
I can certainly see that happening. So I mean, it must have been pretty emotional. So she was taken from you essentially in September. So between September and April, did you see Effie at all?
Yes. 3 days a week.
Yeah, 3 days a week for an hour.
And a half.
And presumably that was somewhere else, not at your house.
Yeah, that was in a place called Wickham. It's a contact center in Wickham.
Okay.
And we had to have someone watch our every move and write things down.
Right, right. And knowing that the slightest thing you did wrong could result in you losing even that hour and a half.
Yeah.
And how did Effie do? I mean, sometimes in these cases the child starts to bond with the foster family and doesn't recognize the mother. Was she still recognizing you as mom and dad?
Yeah. She would smile every time she'd come into the room and see us.
Mm.
And obviously when we'd leave, she most of the time she, you know, we kind of wanted to leave when she was asleep.
Right.
So we kind of get her to sleep. And then it made it slightly easier. I mean, it's not easy to leave, but it kind of made it that slight little bit easier.
Right. I mean, if she was awake when you left, what was her reaction?
She would cry.
Yeah.
And she also did have a seizure while she was in care as well.
Hmm. That's interesting. And did anybody try to explain how there could be a seizure in care if the seizures had been...
It was actually the foster carer that took her to the hospital, and they informed us. And they said that we just wanted to get her checked out.
Yes, but I mean, did anybody say, well, maybe the foster family's abusing her or did they blame the seizures on what they considered the initial abuse?
Yeah, they thought it was due to the bleed in the brain that she had.
Hmm, okay, so it all went back to your fault.
Yeah.
I
think the only people that didn't really blame us were the carers. They weren't off with us at all. And obviously the judge was another one that kind of said that, you know, you can see their loving parents.
So you, in terms of the carers, you mean the foster parents, the people looking after
them? Yeah.
Yes. And how was it when you finally got her back? That must have been something.
Yeah, it was amazing. It didn't sink in properly at first.
Yeah, just that you could have her with you.
Yeah, I mean, when the judge said it, I kind of, you know, asked if I could shake her hand. And not many... As you'll probably be, like, not many people do that. One of the Carla's solicitors, secretary, turned around to me and said, "Normally, the only time you see someone going towards the judge is they're going to actually go for them."
So
it's kind of an honour to actually shake, you know, for someone to shake a judge's hand.
Mm. And did she let you shake her hand?
Yeah, both of us did.
Well. That's nice. One thing I found about the report, which I found kind of interesting, I find the law is so formal that, you know, even if they're talking about, you know, somebody who's killed people, they refer to him as Mr. Jones or whatever. But she thanked all these experts profusely in the report, but at the same time, she's basically saying they're all wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, it seemed to me a judge might be a little annoyed that these experts who are paid a lot of money missed something pretty obvious and almost sent an innocent man, maybe an innocent woman, to jail as well.
Yeah. Did you think she was kind of shocked when obviously because we only, Carla only found out that she had, you know, the EDS after 23 years.
Right.
So it's like, how for 23 years that the doctors missed it?
Mm-hmm.
And it took for Effie to have a bleed on the brain, but then
right.
to think, hold on a minute, something's not right here.
So, Carla, do you think that you've experienced abnormal bleeding in the past?
Only one time was when Effie was born and my whole arm turned purple in the hospital. And they told me it was probably because I moved when they were trying to put a cannula in, but I don't think it was that. I think it may have been the condition.
Yes.
The only other issues I had growing up was just a lot of bruising, really.
Oh, okay, which does indicate some kind of a clotting problem, right?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously not at the level of this hemophilia, where, you know, even a slight scratch can cause uncontrolled bleeding. And have you go ahead.
When, as Carla said, when she was growing up, obviously the bruising, believe it or not, when Carla's parents took her up to the hospital, they came back afterwards and turned around to Carla's parents three times and said, when Carla was three, they came back and turned around to them and said, we've just done some tests and there's no signs of abuse there. So they even, without even telling Carla's parents, they, when Carla went into hospital, when she had a load of bruising, they even tried to find signs of abuse there.
This is when Carla was three?
Yeah, when Carla was 3 years old.
So it was close that maybe Carla's parents might have been accused of abuse back.
Then, yeah.
20 years ago or so.
Yeah.
Interesting. And if you don't mind me asking, have you had problems with your menstruation because of your bleeding?
Oh, yeah.
Like you have heavy periods, or?
Yeah. They're, at the moment, I'm trying to stop because they are absolutely horrendous, and they began when I was 9, which I found a little bizarre.
Mm-hmm. That's
when
not unheard of, but...
Yeah, it's really strange. They kept saying it was because I was born prematurely, but now I think it was just...
Yeah. Right. So maybe your early periods were due to this, but you said you've had heavier than normal periods.
Yeah.
And do you have to take precautions with your diet? Because, you know, if you're bleeding more, you're losing more iron, right?
Yeah, there have been times I've had to have a tablet called tranexamic acid. It's meant to be almost like a blood transfusion, but in tablet form, which is strange.
Right. So there's a little bit more... there's a little bit more there in terms of, you know, you experiencing real symptoms, but I can understand that if nobody put it in the context of a diagnosis, you might just say that, okay, I'm a little bit different than other girls.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's different, I'm different. But it all kind of makes a lot more sense now.
Yeah, definitely. I always wondered why my face kind of didn't look, in a way, the same as other people's, and I would get bullied at school because my eyes were quite big, and now I've got all the answers.
Yes.
As to why.
Well, luckily Craig seemed to think your face was quite attractive, so I guess
yeah.
It's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
So are you planning to have more children? I mean, you don't have to answer, like, that's a private question, but I just wonder, or maybe I should say, has this changed your outlook on how you're going to run your family now that you've been through quite a horrendous situation?
Yeah, I think I always wanted to have at least one more child, but I think I'm more worried now to have any more because of all the complications and things like that.
Right. I mean, I presume that since... Go ahead, sorry.
Oh, no, it's... I was only going to say that they normally, if you have the type 4 EDS, they normally tell you to avoid having children if you're a woman, because it can, a lot of women don't survive the pregnancy or the birth because of the heavy bleeding and...
Right, I could see that if you started to hemorrhage, it could get out of control very quickly.
Yeah.
I understand that. Plus, you've had a rather unpleasant experience with child, you know, hospitals and child protective services, thinking that a medical condition is actually abuse.
Yeah,
so we're getting towards the end. Is there something, what have you learned from this, and would you like to tell people anything about EDS-4 or other things that you've learned through this process?
I think one thing I've learned as well, definitely follow your gut instincts.
If you think something's wrong with you or your child, definitely just keep pushing until you get an answer.
And kind of like never really give up, because you know if you the minute you start to think, you know, you start to give up, is, you know, the minute you've kind of, in a way, you kind of lost.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of letting the people who are accusing you win.
Right. Were there times where you felt like it was pretty hopeless?
No. From day one, we both said, this is medical, we've done nothing wrong. Neither one of us have.
So you had faith that it was all going to work out in the end?
Yeah.
Well, that's great. And
We would like to just say... if obviously you watch YouTube as well, Carla has done 3 videos online stating obviously about EDS and, you know, like the signs of EDS and things like that, and it's hard to diagnose. Obviously, if people wanted to watch them, they are on YouTube.
Okay, well, I'll see if I can find them, and I'll put a link in the show notes, and if I can't find them, I'll send you a message and... I'll get you to send me a link.
Yeah.
Because, it can explain things. And sometimes, I mean, sometimes the diagnosis doesn't help, but I think knowing that you have a condition like this allows you to take precautions and maybe to do things with your diet or supplements to try to counteract the effects of the condition.
Yeah. I think a diagnosis can help save a life as such. I mean, it's not gonna, you know, completely save life, because it's with the vascular EDS, it's one of those that, you know, you can go at any minute. But I think if you've got the diagnosis and you can get the right, you know, the specialists involved that you need, you know, i.e. a vascular surgeon, a cardiologist, a neurosurgeon, things like that, that can monitor you, it will make it a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as you say, like, if you're a woman and you have a baby, then if you know you have EDS, then you obviously are going to have to take some precautions that you wouldn't have to take otherwise. And like you say, that could save your life if people are prepared to manage bleeding if it occurs.
Yeah.
Well, anything else before we close up?
Not that I know of.
I think you're a remarkable couple.
Very much.
You stayed strong and together, and you used your wits to get out of what seemed like a pretty dark situation.
Yeah.
So I think it's a pretty amazing story that you have.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you both for being on my show today, and I will send you a link to the show when it's broadcast, and you're welcome to share it with family and friends or wherever.
Okay. Thank you very much. It was very nice talking to you.
Yeah.
Okay. Good night, then.
Good night.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to episode 181 of The Infectious Myth. If you have a comment, question, or suggestion for a future guest, please email me at david.crow@theinfectiousmyth.com. Like us at facebook.com/theinfectiousmyth. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at infectiousmyth. Commit to monthly donations of any amount at patreon.com/infectiousmyth. Until next week, thank you and goodbye.